Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight, we're going to talk Dark Knight's Metal number 1, Batman number 29, Superman number 29, and our main topic, Batman and Harley Quinn, the animated movie. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, Guggenheim has confirmed that Ragman is coming back for at least one episode of Arrow. Looks like it's going to be episode 5. Now, they didn't specifically say that he's going to be Ragman. They just said basically said the actor was going to be back. So I don't know if we're going to get some sort of flashback or...
That was actually a mix-up. He was actually talking about someone else. So it is not episode 5 that Ragman will be in, but he did say that they do plan to bring the character back at some point in the season.
Okay, so he goofed and said the wrong episode, huh?
So apparently, at least according to him, somebody asked him, is the actor going to show up? And in his head, he thought he meant the guy that's directing episode 5, because the names are vaguely similar. And so he was like, yeah, episode 5, because the guy directing is episode 5. But he did say that they do plan to bring Ragman in at some point.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Yep.
All right. And in other DC news, Black Lightning's getting a miniseries, which isn't too surprising since he's getting his own show.
Yeah. Frankly, I was surprised it's just a miniseries. But on the other hand, I don't know that's necessarily a bad thing because, I mean, most of the miniseries have been pretty good in the Rebirth era. They've been arguably more guaranteed quality.
Yeah, and what's cool is this miniseries is going to be done by the creator of Black Lightning, Tony Isabella. And it looks like it's going to be a 6-issue miniseries beginning in November. So basically, it's going to start a couple months before the show. So
yeah, I'm excited. It's pretty cool. Black Lightning is definitely... not been around much recently, I'd say within the last 6 or 7 years or so. So it'd be nice to have him actually, you know, relevant in comics again too.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is going to be in continuity or separate, but still looking forward to it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, really, either way is fine with me. I don't necessarily need it to be continuity based.
No. Well, like you said, a lot of these miniseries we've been getting have been really good. And I think it's because DC is keeping their hands out of the candy jar and just letting the creators create. So
right, exactly, which is what one of, at certain points, was a big problem the New 52 had, where it was just so, the editorial hand was so heavy in trying to make all of these books line up together as one giant story, really forced a lot of creators to do stuff they really didn't want to do with their stories. So the hands-off approach is great.
Yeah, and they've been doing a lot better with DC Rebirth too, having things join, you know, things working together, but you know, the story's being good for most of the series anyways.
Right.
All right, and in other DC news, this is some Legends of Tomorrow news. I'm going to butcher this name. Susie Ambromet, who played Pam on Jessica Jones, she has been cast to play Susan Palmer, who's Ray Palmer's mother. So I'm guessing we're going to be getting some flashbacks. Either that or they're going to be trying...
Flashback? I would assume it's going to be actual time travel.
You're right. That's what I meant to say. We're going to be getting some time travel back to Ray's childhood. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. Or possibly even earlier than that. It may even be before he's born.
Well, that could be too.
I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll find out. I'm excited about this season of Legends.
Yeah, because one of the nice things about the show is you don't have to do flashbacks; is you can just go there instead.
Yeah, that is true. All right, and in some Flash news, I'm excited about this. Katie Sackhoff has been cast to play Blacksmith. Now, fans of Battlestar Galactica, the newer series, will know her as Starbuck. And I'm very excited about her being on Flash. So I'm guessing she's probably a villain of the week kind of thing. But she's supposed to be featured in episode 5, and it's titled Girls Night Out. And Emily Bett Records from Arrow, who plays Felicity, is supposed to be making a special guest appearance on that episode also. So that's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
All right, and then another DC news. I guess they revealed a cover for the Doomsday Clock where it shows Rorschach images with Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman's emblem. So they're kind of teasing that Rorschach's going to be coming to the DCU, which I'm very excited about.
I'm curious how... I do remember them saying that it was not necessarily a continuation of Watchmen, and so the fact that Rorschach dies at the end of Watchmen doesn't necessarily have any reflection on what would happen with this. So I think as long as people take that in mind, it won't be that weird for him to be in this comic, as long as you're not assuming that Watchmen has happened.
Well, let's just take this. If you have the power to create your own universe that, like, Dr. Manhattan's supposed to have, you should be able to create the characters to be in it. You know what I mean? He could make a new Rorschach.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point, too.
So.
It would be weird. I mean, frankly, it would be weird to do a sort of Watchmen thing and only do Dr. Manhattan. So.
Yeah. I'm sure we're going to be getting the other characters. So I'm curious to see why Rorschach's there and what he's doing.
My only hope is that they don't portray him as just like a straightforward hero, because that's really not what the character is. And I think sometimes gets misinterpreted that way. I have faith that Johns wouldn't do that, but that's my one concern is that he'll be, you know, sort of just a good guy, and that's not really not what Rorschach is.
Yeah. All right, and the last bit of news we have for this week, Warner Brothers is launching a new DC movies franchise separate from the DCEU. And when I saw this, I was kind of surprised about it, especially what they've been rumoring is going to be the first movie of it, which is a movie about the origin of the Joker. Not really something I'm excited about.
It sounds like an idea that a movie executive has that doesn't actually follow comics, because they're like, oh, well, what character do people really love? The Joker, which is true. And then they're like, oh, well, then we have to do an origin movie, because that's what you do. The first movie has to be an origin film. And it's just like, yeah, but if you know anything about the Joker, you know that that's really not the story that you should tell.
Exactly. That's the whole thing about Joker, is nobody knows what his origin actually is, and he's always telling tales of his origin that aren't true.
And I also don't know how you do a Joker solo story. I mean, he's a great character. I will admit that He's not like my all-time favorite villain or anything, and I know that, you know, a lot of people he is, but what makes him work is that he's sort of the antithesis of Batman. You know, you don't read a story just for the Joker, because you would have to make him the protagonist in some way, and that Joker is really not somebody you root for.
No, you don't. So yeah, I have no idea what they're planning on doing with that.
I mean, I guess in a sense an origin makes sense, because it's really the only way you could have a coherent narrative, I think. I mean, because even some really great Joker stories, like Joker by Brian Azzarello, it's pretty good. But it's not even told through Joker's perspective. It's told through a henchman's perspective, and the specter of Batman runs through the whole thing. So it's not even that, you know, its title is Joker, and even that isn't really only about the Joker. So I don't know about that movie. I don't know how it would work.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I just, my gut's telling me, please don't do this. Let's move on.
Yeah. I do, however, like the idea of basically doing Elseworlds movies. I saw there was an article out there that was sort of like, this is sort of DC's destiny. And it kind of makes sense. You know, the way to really do the opposite of what Marvel is doing, to offer something different, is to do a bunch of standalone movies where you don't need to see all of them for it to make sense.
Exactly. You know, they could use their multiverse.
Especially with, I mean, let's be honest, there's a real chance that Justice League isn't going to be a good movie. And so you're going to have almost the entire shared universe that you built be mediocre at best movies, with the one exception of Wonder Woman. It kind of makes sense to then hedge your bets and go, okay, well, what if we stop investing in this universe that has not gone well except for one time, and instead just do... So really what made Wonder Woman work was that it was just its own story. It wasn't bothering to really try and tie in. I mean, it did, but that wasn't the point of the movie.
Right, and it was just brief.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so what really made Wonder Woman work was that it was just a great Wonder Woman story. It was a great Wonder Woman movie. And so, I mean, in a sense, that's taking the best part of the movie. We'll just take this sort of standalone film and write the best story you can for that character without needing to jump through all of these hoops to make sure it ties into the next Justice League story.
Right.
It could work. I don't dislike the plan at all. I mean, I think it could be a little confusing, because I don't think they're abandoning the shared universe either. And so that's a little weird, but, you know, in theory, I think we could potentially get some good movies out of that line. Whether they actually do or not, obviously, is yet to be seen.
Yeah. They still need to work on that. All right. Before we leave DC news, we need to address one last thing. The Batman movie. It's part of the DCEU. It's not part of the DCEU.
The whole time that story broke, I was just like, weird. Everybody is jumping the gun on this the entire time. They have explicitly stated that it is a Ben Affleck Batman film. And I will be honest, even when I read the supposed comments that were telling everybody that it was not part of that universe, it just, to me, his comments read like it's not tying into Justice League, it's just its own Batman story, which is what he was trying to say the whole time. So again, this is just one of those things where, like, the industry, like, it spawned its own news industry, but there's just not a lot of news. And so anytime even a little story breaks, it turns into a big story, because there's nothing else to report on, and it just sort of morphs into something that it never really was.
Right. And I thought that when I saw that, I thought that was pretty weird too. And I'm glad Matt Reeves came out and explained that. And
I feel bad for the guy, because I mean, the poor dude was just saying, like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, it's its own movie, which it absolutely is. Just like Wonder Woman was definitely just its own movie. It wasn't a cog in the Justice League wheel, really.
Not really, yeah. I mean, they tied it to the main universe with the little bit in the front of the movie. I can't remember if they had anything at the end, but you know, it was its own movie.
Yeah. So I just, this is, I honestly, anybody who is in the making of a superhero film, any interview is just such a minefield, because you say just one little thing and it blows up all over the internet, because again, there's just simply not enough comic book news stories to support the many, many different comic book news sources that there are. They're all just fighting over the same little bits of news, so there's just not enough to support it. And so, like you said, you get one little thing and it blows up.
Yeah. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant geekery? Redonkulous? let's not go with Shrek. That you know. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic. Stay on topic.
Topic.
Red leader, I'm
no, I'm sorry.
Stay on topic.
I can't check it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The Roundtable. Brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
And we're back. Let's talk Dark Knights Metal number one. Well, Cletus, it looks like the Justice League finally showed up in Rebirth.
The Voltron thing that they created was so fan servicey. I just was laughing.
But what I loved was, I loved the writing of the Justice League characters and this story and how they interacted with each other. The main title has been lacking this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Scott Snyder's a better writer than Brian Hitch is. So.
Yeah, but even this story has been better than the Justice League stories in the series. Yeah. I actually stopped reading the Justice League series. So what'd you think of this? What'd you think of this title?
I think it is impossible for any DC fan to not find at least one page in this comic that they don't love. There's just so much in it and so much different things in it that sort of just meant to appeal to almost every taste that somebody might have for the DC universe. Whether that's homages to like 90s comics or kind of sillier side with like the Plastic Man egg. I love that personally. Everybody knows I like Plastic Man. That was great. There's something in there for everyone. However, that being said, I also think, so that's a positive, I also think it's the biggest negative in the comic. It is trying so hard to encompass so much DC-ness, so to speak. Like, it's just trying to be all of these aspects of DC at once, that it just, for me, at least within the first issue, I don't think it's a poorly written comic. I didn't think it was bad, but it was just sort of like, I really, really liked a couple pages, but I felt extremely neutral about the comic as a whole because I didn't really know what it was trying to do, because it's doing so much at once, it ultimately doesn't do a whole lot of anything.
I liked it, but I thought it felt like it was in sections. you had like the introduction with the Justice League and Mongol, that whole scene, it felt like the beginning of a movie or a television show before the credits.
Yeah, and it's just its own thing. Like, and that has ultimately nothing to do with anything, basically. Nope.
You're right. It doesn't really tie into the story at all. Then you have the Justice League coming back to Earth. That felt like it was, okay, you had the scene before the credits rolled, now we're moving on to the main story.
Yeah.
And we had this big old mountain appear in Gotham, basically. And Alfred was freaking out about it, trying to get a hold of Master Bruce. He, of course, him being out in space, it's hard to contact him. But one of the things I really liked about this issue is they had a map of the multiverse. And
one thing is actually straight from Multiversity. As an actual page in Multiversity.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Like that artwork that's there, that is a very, very shrunken down, like, digital copy of the map of the multiverse from Multiversity.
I'm trying like to blow it up on my tablet so I can look at it better. I'm like, man, we need to have a closer look at this multiverse map.
get a copy of Multiversity. It's right there, the whole map. It's really cool too. If people haven't seen that map before, I'm sure it's online as well, but it's really cool. And there's a lot of like little things that Morrison put in there that sort of, it's sort of like there's always 52 universes, but there's almost like a release valve where the old ones kind of go away and new ones feed in. So there's this constant 52, but it's not the same 52. It's really cool.
Now, I thought it was pretty cool when Kendra Saunders was explaining about where this dark energy was coming from. And basically, she just flipped the map over and Wonder Woman's like, it's just black on the backside. And that her point being that the dark multiverse is basically underneath the DC multiverse. Hey, this can get kind of confusing.
Yeah.
But it was a simple...
I will say it felt like a very kind of Morrison thing, though, in a sense. I know Snyder's the one writing it, but the idea of there being another side of the, like, almost like the multiverse is a page in a book and the other side of the page is a different multiverse, felt very much like a Morrison idea. So I thought that was really cool for Snyder to kind of on his own sort of come up with that idea of just turning the map over, that there would be something on that side too. That was cool.
Yeah. And it makes it easier to understand, which is kind of cool. All right, and then we get towards the end of the comic. We find out that the whole reason Kendra brought the Justice League to that island, they were trying to set a trap for Batman. And, of course, it failed. Of course, Batman had... This is what I loved about the story, is the rest of the Justice League, like, you're trying to set a trap for Batman? I think it was Flash. He was like, he probably had an escape idea before he even set foot on the island. And it was because they kind of played on it with a joke. Like he would have some sort of technology or something here, but he was actually riding some beast. It was hilarious.
Yeah. And that was something I thought was kind of odd about the comic, where like that whole sequence where he basically just like grabs a raptor and rides away was really funny. Like it's legitimately really funny. But then at the same time, it's also trying to be like super serious and like this evil is like the most evil thing to ever be evil, and it will out evil all other evil things. And its name is Barbados. And I was like, I just don't care. Like it was so self-serious in setting it up. And then even the Justice League themselves were just sort of like, eh. And then I think the problem was is because they didn't even treat it like that was the big reveal. The big reveal is then like, well, really, the reason I brought you here, despite this evilly evil of all evils, is that really it's Batman I'm trying to stop. We're like, we already knew. Like, anybody who's paid attention to this event at all knows that Batman is the catalyst to this thing. They have been open about that. And so when that was treated like a twist, I was like, what? Who doesn't? Like, I understand within the story, yes, absolutely, those characters don't know that. But we as readers, don't treat us like idiots. You've already flat out told us that Batman is the Catalyst. The Joker straight up told us this. So I don't know. That was the thing that was weird to me, where it was, I just, like I said, I thought the comic was all over the place, where there was some really, really, really funny moments, some really cool moments, and then there was other stuff where it was taking itself so seriously, and I was like, well, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to be really funny and fan servicey, like with the Voltron thing? Like, that's really funny. But then also you're also trying to be this super dark, serious thing with Barbados and these evil Batmans. It's kind of like you kind of have to pick one at a certain point. Like, you can obviously have both to a certain extent, but you can't have both extremes at the same time.
Did you get the sense that they were trying to say that Batman's plan was to get to that island and get that piece of nymph metal like he knew it was there?
Probably. That's probably, I mean, Snyder is very much into writing Batman as a somewhat omnipotent. So, yeah, that's kind of what I got from it. That's personally never been the kind of Batman portrayal that I've been into. I prefer King's approach, for example, to Batman, where he's sort of a more fallible, like, he's an amazing hero, right? And he's the best detective, but he is still human and is still capable of making mistakes. Personally, and you know, this is just personal taste, I've never really been one to enjoy this sort of bat god that some writers tend to do. And not, Snyder doesn't do that all the time, but occasionally he'll drift into that sort of bat god territory. I'm like, not for me.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title, Batman number 29. And here you go. Speaking of Tom King, this whole episode was Bruce Wayne inviting Joker and Riddler over for dinner to discuss the end of the war.
I really liked the conceit for this, where it's basically just framed within the different courses for dinner. So basically each course spawned a different conversation between them. That sort of narrative conceit really worked for me. I thought that was really cool.
Hey, Cletus.
Yep.
Knock, knock.
Yeah, that's...
You're not going to play into it. Dang it.
No.
That knock, knock joke was hilarious.
Yeah, no, those were good. The attempt, the joke, when the Joker just tries to kill the Riddler quickly by throwing a knife at him, and the Riddler just catches it, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Just the banter between the Riddler and Joker, and like that sort of like "I hate you" banter was great. It was just, I really enjoyed the dialogue in this comic.
I can't believe the Joker didn't crack up at his "No, you're a poo" joke. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. I am. So, who do you think Batman's going to give the money to? Because it seems to be, by the end of it, it seemed to suggest that he did indeed ultimately give one of them $1 billion.
Yeah. My guess is the Riddler. I can't see him siding with Joker. I mean, Joker didn't even have a decent point.
But that almost makes me wonder if that would make him pick the Joker, because on a certain level, like, the Joker is obviously a psychopath, but there's like this portrayal of the Riddler is like intentional, you know, like evil in a sense, whereas the Joker is more of just like a chaotic evil sort of thing. I don't know how to describe it exactly, but like, I could see the Batman sort of being like, the Joker I can stop because the Joker doesn't even know what he wants to do next necessarily, so I could support him. But the Riddler has a legit plan. The Riddler knows what he wants to do, and if I give him money, he will absolutely be able to execute that plan. So it's, I don't know.
I know. It was... Tom King did a great job of writing this where the outcome... We have no clue what the outcome is going to be. Batman could go either way.
And he might not actually give either of them the money, but it really seemed to me to suggest that he was going to, which that in itself was a big surprise. I was like, oh wait, you actually did that.
And the weird thing about it is, if he doesn't give the $1 billion, he's going to have them coming after him.
And the thing I really like, and that he's done, and King has done this with multiple stories that he's told, is that we already know, because of in the very first issue of this arc, Batman straight up told us in like the present day that he did something that he is deeply, deeply ashamed of. And so we know at some point Batman is going to do something wrong in this story, and we just don't know what it is yet. So like, it might be this $1 billion thing, but it might not be it either. And that's just so crazy. We know he's going to do something wrong, but we don't know what it is. And that, in a sense, almost makes it more of a mystery than if we just didn't know anything at all.
Yeah, because you're right. We know he's going to do something. We have no clue what it is, and we're just sitting on at the edge of our seats in anticipation of finding out what the heck it is.
Yeah.
This is what makes Tom King such a great writer.
I agree completely. I mean, and again, I will admit that I am a huge Tom King fan, so there's definitely a little bit of a bias there, but it's great. I have really, really enjoyed this storyline.
I have too. And this was such a different thing you would expect Batman to do.
Right.
Number one, Bruce Wayne's always been the mask, so for him to sit down with the Joker and Riddler and invite them into his home and just eat a dinner with him, it's just weird.
It was so weird. It was so uncomfortable yet fascinating. Like, it was just – one of the things I've really enjoyed about this is that it'd be so easy to just tell this story with just a bunch of superhero and supervillain fights and just like a bunch of like, you know, this squad of – Batman villains fights this squad of Batman villains, and instead he's basically told that story, but told it in a way you don't expect. So instead of getting a big Joker Riddler fight, we have them sitting down to dinner and basically squabbling over dinner.
We're getting great jokes and
things
going on. And even though Joker and Riddler brought their gangs, you want to call them, they didn't really do anything. It was all Riddler and Joker.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It was just well written, and this is great.
I agree.
One thing that Tom King missed out from this issue, we didn't have any Kite Man stuff.
Next issue is the next interlude in the story. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be in it.
Well, it's like the next Kite Man standalone story.
Oh, it's a Kite Man standalone story.
Yeah, So it's the second. I think there was supposed to be two. So we got the first one, and then this is the next sort of Kite Man interlude within the bigger story.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to Superman number 29.
This issue itself was a little bit slow, but that being said, it made me – I was so excited to see where the story was going to go by the end of it.
Oh, yeah. I was too.
I thought it took a little bit to get the ball rolling, but once it got going, I was like, oh, I am super excited for this story.
One of the things I thought they should have done different with this issue, the issue opens up with – that kid playing the video game and going into that abandoned building and finding Parallax. I think they should have done it. They should have not shown us that part and just started off with Superman meeting up with the parents of the missing kids and left it more of a mystery.
I agree, but the problem is they would have then also, they needed to not have the cover be what it was.
No. Yeah.
That also gave away, of course, that it was going to be a yellow lantern story. But I agree with you. I think that's what made the story feel kind of slow at the beginning, because we, the readers, knew it was a Parallax story, and we just kept waiting. We're like, dude, it's Parallax. Come on, figure it out already. And that's sort of when the reader knows something that the character doesn't, it can make the narrative feel kind of slow because you're waiting for the character to know what you already know. And so I think, like you said, if they just took that, our knowledge away and made it a mystery to us as well, you could have had the story be exactly the same. I think it would have been more interested in the beginning of the story.
Yeah, I think so too.
That being said, now that the cat's out of the bag, though, I am super curious to see where it goes.
I am too. One of the things I really liked about the story is when Superman and actually confronted Parallax, he tried to take over Superman. He defeated Parallax. Parallax wasn't able to take him over. The only way he could take Superman is when he started killing the children, and Superman, being who he is, gave himself over to Parallax to save the children.
Yeah.
Of course, that tactic won't work if Parallax takes him over and he kills the children anyways, but...
Right.
Sometimes Superman doesn't think about that kind of stuff. Sometimes I think he's too quick to give up when other people are in peril trying to save them. And, you know, when he gives himself over where somebody's taking control of him, he's basically making it worse, I think.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be Superman if he didn't sacrifice himself like that, though.
Yeah,
that's sort of what makes him Superman.
That's true. That is true, but who's going to stop him then?
Right. Oh, no, I understand. I agree with you. So in regards to where this story is going to go, I am hopeful that we're going to get a Sinestro more portrayed more similarly to what we had in Johns' run and also the solo title that he had. He was portrayed pretty well in that, where there was a lot more nuance to the character and not just the literal mustache twirling villain. we didn't like when he was in that, the very beginning of the Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns run. I really didn't like that Sinestro because I thought Vendetti, of course, you all know how I think about what I feel about him as a writer. I thought he basically just reverted Sinestro into just like a black and white bad guy. And that's obviously what the character has been in the past, but he's much more interesting when he's not that. And I hope we get that nuanced Sinestro in this story. I don't know if we will or not, but that's my hope.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling we're going to see Sinestro as the hero in this, because I don't think he wants Parallax to have control of Superman.
Yeah. But that's exactly the kind of story I would like to see, where we see Sinestro is not a good guy, but I like seeing Sinestro. He's also not, occasionally, depending on the writer, he's also not a purely bad guy either. And I like seeing those stories where it's a person who is not inherently good attempt to be good. Those are the kind of stories I like.
That's what makes Sinestro a great character, is he always thinks he's doing the right thing. Right. That he believes he's doing the right thing. That's what makes him a great villain. Because he does villainous things to try to get to do the right thing. I mean, it doesn't always do the right thing, but you know what I mean.
No, I agree. And I think in the stories where they actually have his actions also be that sort of morally gray area are the stories that capitalize on that characteristic the best. Because if you have him doing something straightforwardly evil and he's like, oh no, but it's for the greater good, you're like, well, no, that's obviously bad. Like, murdering an entire planet's obviously bad, Sinestro, come on. So, yeah, and that's sort of what Vendetti did, where there was just, he was clearly doing just straight up evil stuff, and it's like, I don't buy into your morally gray objective because you're doing something obviously evil. So I'm hoping in this, with Sinestro, in this story, we might get, you know, like you said, sort of acting as a hero, attempting to draw Superman away to get, obviously for selfish reasons, so that he can get Parallax, so then he can become powerful again. But at the same time, also, you know, maybe inadvertently saving people too.
Sinestro's been gone since Hal Jordan defeated him in that crazy, my ring's more powerful than your ring battle.
Oh, I hated that story.
But basically, this is the first time we've seen him since then. I mean, he showed
well,
up.
Well, we did. He did show up briefly in the sort of like season-ish finale that these Rebirth titles are doing in issue 25.
Yeah. So that I think didn't he reappear back on Quard or whatever the name?
I think it was on Quard. Yeah. But he was not in good. He was not in the kind of shape that we see him in the Superman title. He does not look good at the end of Green Lantern 25. So I'll be curious to see if we get a sort of answer for that, or if they're just going to be like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's just Sinestro. Because honestly, I'm fine with that. I really don't need it to tie into Vendetti's story. So I am okay.
So I'm really looking forward to the next issue of this. Superman has been such a great title.
I agree. And I love how varied it's been, too. I think one of the things that's kept it so good is because they're really keeping the stories fresh by having him do a bunch of different things. We've had those sort of like pseudo horror stories when John was going into the swamps. We had like a multiverse story, which was one of my favorites. We've had some really great father-son ones. We've had some great like family outings. It's been really varied and really, you know, fun title to read.
Yes, it has been. All right, well, that wraps up our comics talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Batman and Harley Quinn.
The Terminus Doctor Who Podcast. Queer. Opinionated. Whovian. Female. The Terminus Podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and many other favorite podcatchers. You can find us online at terminus.libsyn.com, or on Twitter at terminuscast, or on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/terminusdwpodcast, or finally on Tumblr at terminusdwpodcast.tumblr.com. Be sure to check us out there and subscribe to keep up with new episodes. Alonzi.
And we're back. Let's talk Batman and Harley Quinn. I gotta tell you, Cletus, this movie was not what I was expecting.
In what way? I have a feeling that you and I are not going to have the same opinion on this movie.
Probably not. I went into this movie not expecting it to be as funny as it was. I thought it was hilarious.
I'm glad you thought it was hilarious. I will admit there was definitely some funny scenes. I did not share that opinion. I went into it expecting it to be sort of an extension, albeit more adult, version of the Batman the Animated Series, and it wasn't that. So in that sense, it defied my expectations as well.
I was dying laughing. I watched part of it while I was at work, so I'm like in the break room busting out laughing. The Tweedledee and Tweedledum singing. Harley singing, Catwoman's henchmen from the Batman 66. They're wearing the Batman 66 costumes. When they send him, when they're in the bar and they send him a cup of milk, I died laughing. And then when one of the henchmen went up behind Batman and starts doing that bat dance from the Batman 66, man, yeah. I cracked up. That was hilarious.
There were definitely absolutely some really good jokes. That in particular, I thought that one was really funny, the sort of Batman 66 homage in there. I did not like the movie. I'm not gonna lie. I didn't think it was very good. I think Bruce Timm needs Paul Dini more than people realize, in my opinion.
See, I'm the opposite. I loved it because I thought it was funny. Now, that being said, I thought the ending was terrible.
It's just, and I thought they were trying to basically have it be a joke, like how the joke's on you. You thought you were going to get this big epic ending, and it just is going to like. And I was just like, I get that the idea of that being funny, but ultimately, the joke there is ha ha, joke's on you. There's no ending to this movie. It's sort of like flipping the audience off and expecting them to. So yeah, I agree. It didn't work for me. I was like, seriously? I already wasn't enjoying the movie, so I was already in a position to not be happy with the ending. And I was just like, why?
Yeah, that was disappointing for me. Swamp Thing shows up. I'm like, yeah, Swamp Thing. He gives a speech and then disappears. I'm like, really?
And that itself was funny. I will admit that was pretty funny. I think I would have appreciated that joke more if there had then been some semblance of an ending. But instead, they basically just cut to the credits with a quick match joke, and it was like, seriously?
Yeah, I know.
So in a sense, it almost ruined what was frankly a pretty clever Swamp Thing joke. Because it was just like, wait, no, but you have to at least give me an ending after that. That joke is only funny if you then give some sort of satisfying ending after that. Every story has to have some sort of catharsis, or it doesn't work as a story. You have to give the viewer or reader, depending on what the story is, some reason to have read or watched your story.
But I loved all the moments up to the ending. I thought it was pretty funny. I like the Nightwing Harley Quinn bedroom scene. Thought that was hilarious.
Oh, I hated that. I hated that scene.
I knew it was gonna happen. I just knew it was gonna happen, and it was just, the way they did it was funny. I thought.
Hey, no, that's good. The podcast is more interesting to listen to if we disagree, right?
Yeah. So, and then the other thing I thought was funny was when they're done in the bedroom, Batman shows up and it's just kind of like,
yeah,
just kind of like judging without saying anything. I just found it hilarious. It was just funny.
So, for me personally, I had a couple. My biggest complaints were, Harley Quinn is definitely a sexual character for sure, but the manner in which she was sexualized in this movie for me was extremely off-putting, because I didn't think it was more we were seeing her be sexy through the male character's perspective and less her taking ownership of that, to me. So I didn't really like that. I thought that was really off-putting. And then the other thing I really didn't like was, I thought Bruce Timm's Batman designs are fantastic. I don't think anybody would argue that. It's one of the things that makes Batman the Animated Series such a classic. And the designs in this are again, great. But the animation of those character designs are frequently really bad. I don't know if you caught this. There's a couple times where after the explosion and there's like dirt and soot on Batman, Nightwing, and Harley. At certain times, the soot is moving around on them, but the characters themselves aren't moving very much because they animated them separately.
I didn't notice that, but I also watched over half the movie on my phone.
Yeah. So, again, I want to clarify, the art itself is really good, and it's exactly what you would expect from Bruce Timm's art style. The animation of that art. I mean, there's a lot of times where I made this comment too when we watched The Killing Joke, where there were certain scenes where characters were, it was that really old school animation style where characters aren't actually moving. It's just the background moving behind them. And there was multiple scenes of that. And it was like, guys, I understand you're trying to do that sort of Batman the Animated Series style, but it is 2017. You can do that style in a, you know, modern animation. there was just a couple scenes where, like, when Harley is leaving her job and she's doing the crossword. That scene goes on for an oddly long amount of time for no real reason. We just see her doing that crossword, and she's not she herself isn't actually moving on the screen if you pay attention. She stays in the exact same spot on the screen that she's on, and it's just the background moving behind her, and there's no real point to it. It's almost like a 2 or 3 minute scene that I frankly don't understand why it's in there. And then I really liked the Tweedledee Tweedledum duet, but did we need the entire song?
No,
that was another thing. I was like, that was really cool, and it sounded very nice. It was well sung, and I liked the joke, but it was like, as it kept going, I kept being like, wait, why are we getting the entire song here? Like, we really didn't need two back-to-back musical numbers, two full musical numbers. That again, it was weird. For a movie that's not that long, it's only like an hour and 14 minutes or so. Those were two scenes that took up, relatively speaking, a decent chunk of time where they could have added an actual ending to the movie, for example.
Yeah, but I gotta admit, the bar scene was one of the best parts of the movie.
Oh, yeah, and I did not dislike the bar scene. It was just when they... It was clear that when they were really committing to that first musical number, it was just, I kept waiting for it to just be like a clip of it, and they kept going. I was like, oh, we're really dedicated to this one. And then Harley immediately started her musical number right after that, and I was like, well, we literally just did a musical number. So even if we could have split those up somehow a little bit more, I don't know. It was some really weird storytelling decisions. And again, I personally, my takeaway from this was that Paul Dini does not get nearly enough credit for Batman the Animated Series that he deserves. I feel like a lot of people sort of give most of it to Bruce Timm. And to me, my takeaway was that the writing was responsible for quite a bit of the quality.
Part of the main thing of the story was Batman and Nightwing decided they had to have Harley Quinn to find Poison Ivy. But this is something I just kind of had an issue with when I was watching. I was like, why does Batman have to have Harley Quinn to find Poison Ivy? With him and Nightwing both working on it with their detective skills, they should have been able to find Poison Ivy on their own.
Yes. I am willing to overlook some of the sort of weird character decisions, because as a Harley Quinn story, I expect it to be a little bit of a satire. So, like, ironically, I was actually prepared to accept kind of un-Batman-like decisions because it's supposed to be a sort of, you know, satire, humorous story. But even with those expectations, I still was sort of like, but why?
I know. See, when I was watching that, I thought that. I'm like, why do they need to have Harley Quinn come along? And then I got over it real quick because...
Yeah.
just some of the things in there were funny. Scene we haven't talked about yet is Batman and Nightwing are... They're driving in the Batmobile with Harley Quinn in the back, and she says she needs to pull over, and Batman's like, no. And she just starts farting. And even after that, Batman doesn't pull over. I just thought that was strange.
Yeah. I did enjoy the, I don't remember if it's right after or right before that, when Booster calls.
Oh, yeah, that was scene's hilarious.
And offer them different Justice League, man. And they're all like D-list superheroes. And then he offers himself. That was pretty good. That was probably my favorite scene.
That was hilarious.
Of course, Head Booster.
And what's funny is Nightwing's over there doing sign language or something, and and they're putting up words of what he's sign languaging to Batman. It's hilarious.
I think so. Obviously, I've made my viewpoint pretty clear. I think most people will probably enjoy this movie. it definitely has the style that Tim is famous for, and it theoretically looks nice. I didn't like the way it was animated, but I suspect that's not going to bother most people. So I think most people will enjoy this movie.
The animation style didn't really bother me that much. I mean, I didn't pay that close attention to it. I was paying more attention to the jokes and stuff than I was to the animation. Of course, I also watched most of the movie on my phone too. So, but I enjoyed it myself. Disappointed in the ending, of course, but I liked a lot of the jokes that were in there.
It's the joke of not having an ending to the story is one of those things that's like really funny in the editing room. Like, haha, what if we did this? It's less funny when people are like paying real money to see your movie. So,
yeah, and one of the issues I had with it is you had both Batman and Nightwing kiss her on the cheek. I'm like, Batman wouldn't kiss her on the cheek.
Yeah.
It just felt weird.
It was odd. We felt almost like they had run out of runtime. They're like, oh, we just have to end it here. In which case, I couldn't help but go back and be like, but why did you have the crossword scene and that full two musical numbers? Like, even if you absolutely had to have the movie that length, I don't know, maybe you really had to have it that length, there were ways to get around that. There were scenes you absolutely did not need to have. So, the ending bugged me too.
All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. What's your shout out, Cletus?
So, there's a couple different comics that Paul Dini and Bruce Timm have written together, kind of, you know, based out of that animated series world. I think Mad Love is the one that people might be most familiar with, which is basically just like an adaptation of the episode that they did. I thought, because it's more appropriate for the movie that we saw, Harley and Ivy. It's a collection of a miniseries that they did. It's also got a couple other stories in there too. But it's basically just, it's just a Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy team up with Dini and Tim.
All right, and for my shout out this week, I'm going to shout out about Earth Station 1 Tales of the Station Volume 2, because I have a story in there. The Earth Station DCU and the Mystery of the Naked Woman. It is finally out and on sale on Amazon. So I will have that in the show notes so you guys can check that out. Next week, we're going to be talking about Batman, A Lonely Place of Dying. And I'm so excited for that episode because it's one of my favorite stories. All right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.